Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Before taking his seat at Wembley, Sir Jim Ratcliffe completed the London Marathon and compared the race to the job he has to do at Old Trafford.
There are some parallels, I have to say, but I think it just sort of requires some grit, doesn't it? You know, I mean, always in the marathon, after 30K, it gets quite difficult. And I don't think we're quite at 30K with the football yet.
And despite reaching a second successive FA Cup final...
Hoyland against Collins... Manchester United just about find a way to win.
Will overcoming Manchester City and winning the cup be enough to keep Erik ten Hag in his job at Manchester United next season? And if he were to leave, would it make any difference? I'm Ayoake Molere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. Okay, so with us today, we have The Athletic's Manchester United writer, Carl Anker. And also, having watched Sir Jim Ratcliffe at the London Marathon before quickly heading over to Wembley himself, Mark Critchley. Mark, I hope the Athletic helicopter got you there on time. But look, that game could only really be described as relief, really, for Manchester United fans, don't you think?
Either relief or total embarrassment. I don't know which the two would be. Look, I think like yesterday was a strange game. Plenty of the players said as much afterwards. But also not that strange. It's actually rather familiar and what we're used to seeing from Manchester United, in that things collapse, things fall apart, all quite quickly as well. I think embarrassment is the word, to be honest. I know relief, but that word embarrassment was put to Erik ten Hag afterwards in his press conference. He said that he didn't recognise it. He didn't, you know, he himself didn't use it. But he did say that there were mixed feelings around the performance and the fact that they'd reached, yes, a second FA Cup final in as many years. But... in the least positive way possible, if you like, surrendering a 3-goal lead to a team that's eighth in the championship in a game where they look so comfortable. You know, I think that was a huge part of yesterday, that in a lot of respects, it was a very different United performance for that first hour that we've come to expect recently. They did look composed. They did look controlled. They did look like it would be comfortable for them for once. But we know that this United side has this ability to allow a game to run away from them. And that's exactly what happened in those circumstances. And I think Ten Hag's frustration was that they'd done the hard bit. They'd won the game. Now he wanted them to see it out. But seeing it out is the hard bit for this United team. It's now, just thinking back, since the quarterfinal against Liverpool, they've surrendered 1-0, 3-2, 2-1, and now a 3-0 lead. They've conceded, I think, 4 goals after the 90th minute in that time. This is something that we've come to expect from them, but you almost don't expect it to happen against Coventry City in a game, in a tie, in a draw that most people thought would be a bit of a gimme. So I think the only real positive to come out of yesterday was that United are through to a cup final, that there's a possibility of winning the trophy, that a season that has been miserable for the most part and chaotic and maddening could still end in a trophy. But even that which should be a huge positive, is kind of outweighed by all the negatives.
Right. Before we go any further, I must also point out, as a neutral, that was one of the most spellbinding cup semi-finals I've seen in a very long time. So let's get the coverage you take with the Athletic's Tom Burrows, who was also at Wembley as Mark Robins' side almost pulled off one of the great FA Cup semi-final wins.
This was an extraordinary game that Coventry came so close to winning at the death.
It's on to Wright. He's got Sims at the far post. Coventry on the attack. It's in! It's one of the most remarkable comebacks in FA Cup history. Well, is there a possible offside in the build-up to the goal?
Indeed, after the match, Mark Robins said that had Hadji Wright cut his toenail, it wouldn't have gone to penalties.
I just think I'm really proud of everybody. You know, players, staff, supporters were absolutely outstanding. This FA Cup run will be spoken about certainly in Coventry City circles for a long, long time. So whilst I'm disappointed for everybody, we can't be too down about it. We've shown we've gone toe-to-toe with the Manchester United side. When we're 3-0 down and come back to 3-3 and almost won it with a fourth and lose it on a penalty shootout, which can happen, as we know.
Yeah, this extraordinary sort of scene at the end where, after the penalty shootout, the Manchester United end sort of quickly filed out, mostly sort of deserted, and then almost the entire Coventry end had stayed to sort of clap their players. And it was this sort of weird thing where Manchester United obviously won the game in the penalty shootout, but it almost felt as though their fans had sort of sheepishly left, almost embarrassed by the fact that they'd been 3-0 up and allowed Coventry back into the game. And the Coventry fans, even though their team had lost, were the ones who were really proud of their players at the end of an absolutely superb FA Cup match.
Had Hadji Wright chosen to cut his toenails, it might not have gone to penalties, Carl. I mean, I was watching that and I thought, United could throw this away, you know. And Mark alluded to the word embarrassment. Is that how you would have seen it?
I really did not know what to make of that. That wasn't a United implosion to the same level of the defeat against Chelsea or defeats to Galatasaray and Copenhagen earlier on in the season. This was a real slow drip feed. And United should have known better. You're 3-0 up after an hour in an FA Cup game. There was talk about possibly playing some of the kids to give them experience of playing at Wembley. And yet they managed to conceive a calamitous collapse. One well-taken goal from Sims, one deflected goal from O'Hare. But once the score was 3-2, you could see Coventry's tails were up and Manchester United wilted, which they often do in these situations where they concede a goal in interesting situations. And you can see the lack of conviction in these players. Ten Hag said he prefer to focus on the achievement. The difficult thing there is getting to back-to-back FA Cup finals is a good thing, but what do you do in those finals? Now, last year was a defeat in some pretty brutal circumstances thanks to Gundogan's performance. And if Manchester United play anywhere like the final half an hour of regulation time they did against Coventry, they will not beat Manchester City. Ten Hag said Manchester United are very capable of playing to a very high level, but also sometimes they play at a very, very low level. And it's up to him to teach the players to be more responsible, to try and be more consistent. That's an answer that could be given out at multiple points this season. And I think quite a few United fans left Wembley going, why does this keep happening to this team right now? And will it ever stop?
I would love to go into where the manager fits into this a little later on. But Mark, you know, Sir Jim Ratcliffe just run the London Marathon, you know, real grit, determination, you know, all those kind of things you want to associate with a Manchester United squad. He makes it in. I think it was a half time to watch. And you also had the Glazers there. Sir Dave Brailsford were also there. I mean, what would they have been looking at in terms of this team in front of them? Maybe not the Glazers necessarily, but Sir Jim, coming off the London Marathon, expecting to see his boyhood club at an FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah, look, I think it was an important day in that respect. You know, obviously Ratcliffe being there, but it was also the first time that in a long time that Joel and Avram Glazer were there Obviously still the majority owners of United, even though they've handed over control of football operations. You also had Jason Wilcox there for the first game since obviously his appointment as technical director was confirmed on Friday. So it was his first game as well. He's going to have an input in decision making. So there was a lot of important figures who are going to have influence over any eventual decision that you talk about, not just with Ten Hag, but with players as well this summer. Experiencing firsthand, you know, arguably what was nearly the worst result, not just of the season, but in Manchester United's recent history, let's face it. But I think Ratcliffe is key. Yeah, obviously he came back after the marathon, got in at half time. So he almost missed the good bit, if you like, and got there for the collapse in the second half. It's actually the first win of sorts, if you like, that Ratcliffe has witnessed since Ineos' takeover. He attended the 2-2 against Spurs back in January. He was at the 4-3 against Chelsea recently as well, which was quite a chaotic game, and at the 2-2 against Liverpool. And so he's broken his duck in that respect. But I do think that the manner of the way that United went about things yesterday will obviously have made an impression. And look, it's not like he's not watching the games on TV or whatever, but it's like when if you had your big boss comes into work and he sees you, you know, filing all your reports, boxing off all the spreadsheets, but then you somehow wipe the company hard drive and set the office on fire, right? Like things go terribly. That's going to make an impression on you. And United were a toenail away, as we just said, to one of the worst results of their history and throwing away the last saving grace that they have this season. So look, I don't think it helps Ten Hag's cause. I don't think it helps some of the players' causes that Ratcliffe was there to witness it yesterday.
Yeah, Carl, I don't know if you saw the interview he did on the BBC with Gabby Logan after he'd run the marathon. And he was comparing taking over at Manchester United to a marathon. They were trying to gauge what part of the marathon he was actually on.
I saw this. Think he alluded. He said he feels like they've done the first 10K. And this will take a while.
Exactly.
It feels like United are in the first 10K of a rebuild. And sounds nice. Looking at that performance at Wembley, I'd put that down to maybe 5K. And even then, maybe someone's pointing out that your shoelaces are untied and you're at risk of falling over, tripping over and falling flat on your face. Manchester United, with the Ineos minority investment, do seem to be getting some aces in places. Yeah, Wilcox's arrival as technical director should change some of the setup, particularly in regards to youth development, youth recruitment, and possibly the adaptation academy players make when they go into the first team. Darren Fletcher was previously a technical director, and while I know he did very well at sort of imparting soft knowledge and soft skills to players just breaking through, the technical director remit can be very, very wide-ranging, and Wilcox might be better suited to that role, although I do know Fletcher will be retained in some capacity afterwards. So that's one good thing. Ineos appears to be going after Dan Ashworth in this director of football role. John Murta's departed as well. There are many, many different people that can give you many, very different answers as to Murta's time as the footballing director. I always found that quite curious that he didn't quite get the director of football term as well. So these are the good things possibly Ineos are looking to bring in. However, on the footballing side of things, the thing you're in charge of, the football right now is not good. And it has not been good for some time. If you want to be really, really, really cheeky, Mark, Manchester United didn't actually win that game. It went to a draw and they won a penalty shootout. If you want to be Opta specky nerds.
I said win of sorts, you know, I'm even caveating that, but I think we do have to, you know, they're in the final. So whatever, yeah, but I know you
indeed.
Mean.
So there's that. And United haven't played in a convincing fashion for quite some time, from minute one to minute 90, I should say. United do have 20-minute, 30-minute phases where they look very, very good. And I think this is the fear, this is the doubt, these are the questions from Manchester United fans, which are going from why does this keep happening, but also how long will it take for this to stop? I saw the rest of that interview Sir Jim Ratcliffe gave where he said, "This, you ask for patience." I think Manchester United fans can be patient for a season or a season and a half. The patience that might be needed could be multiple years, and I'm not sure if there's any appetite for that at this point in time.
You're listening to the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Hello everyone, this is Ian Irving and I host Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. To be honest, it's been hard yet again in recent weeks to take your eyes off the club both on and off the pitch. So make sure you're across all the latest goings on with me, Andy Mitten, Laurie Whitwell and Carl Anka as we enjoy and endure the end to another crazy campaign. It's United insight you just don't get anywhere else. Join us twice a week wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I guess we have to talk about the manager, Erik ten Hag, and you wrote a piece after that FA Cup game, Carl, and there's a line which really caught my eye. It says there is a gap between what ten Hag wants and what these players are capable of, and neither party seems capable of bridging that distance. So what's the solution then? New players or get rid of the guy? I don't know. Like, you know, it's such a tricky one, isn't it? Because he's clearly got a DNA in his head of how he wants to play football, but you still get this sense that he's weighed down by the Manchester United way, and I don't even know what the Manchester United way is.
Right, okay. So, if a Manchester United way does exist, it's winning. The quickest answer to what is the Manchester United way is winning games of football with young players in an attacking style, and most of those young players come through your academy. Now, that description I've just said...
It's an Ajax style, right?
That can apply to a number of other top football clubs, right? Barcelona want to play winning football with a number of academy graduates in an attacking style. Ajax want to do that. Bayern Munich want to do that. So the Manchester United way, I think, can be something of a misnomer because it can be a nebulous term, because even Sir Alex Ferguson himself during that incredible 26-year run, you know, the Manchester United team of 2008-2009 was very, very different to the United team of 93-94. And how they went about things. Football changes. Football always changes. And the great thing about United in their winning days was how they were a chameleon team. They could shapeshift and they could subsume good tactics and move on from certain things as well. So the Manchester United way, let's put that to one side. I think what we're seeing with Manchester United under Erik ten Hag this season is a ambitious, possibly naive tactical plan. So Ten Hag comes into this season and he said, we want to make Manchester United the best transition team in the world. And he said, it suits the players and it suits the style of Manchester United's history. And I think that goes back to, you know, you sit in Old Trafford and you listen to the Stretford End chant, attack, 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 attack. And you listen to United fans talk about the lineage of very, very thrilling wingers. And I also think Ten Hag might be a little bit mindful of negating any possible comparisons between him and Louis van Gaal, who managed to win an FA Cup, but also was removed from his station because the football was just boring to a negative perspective a while ago. So transition-based football can be very effective against some of the bigger teams. We've seen Manchester City get hit on counterattacks by previous Manchester United managers, and we know Liverpool play a transition-based style as well. So play a transition-based style of football, you can beat some of the biggest clubs in Europe. Tick. Manchester United's best players, Marcus Rashford, Bruno Fernandes, Casemiro, Luke Shaw, their top forms last season, all are well suited to the transition-based football. So, tick. So I can see why Ten Hag went into this season going, let's just double down on transition-based football and increase all the sliders on what we were doing last season. The problem is, one, everyone is injured. Every notable player from Manchester United's last season into this season has suffered some form of muscular injury apart from Bruno Fernandes, because Bruno Fernandes likes chocolate, cereal, and by all accounts might be a mutant. I don't know how that man recovers from injury. I don't know. He must be doing something fantastic, but he's a physical unicorn and a freak in a way that should be applauded more. I think when Bruno Fernandes eventually hangs up his boots and United have to replace him, I think the easiest thing to replace from Bruno Fernandes will be his on-ball creativity, which feels bizarre. And the hardest things United will have to replace is his availability, because football players shouldn't be that available all the time. So you've got this design, tactical scheme of playing transition-based football that came out from three or four different criteria, and you can't do that because so many of your players are injured. And instead, what you've got is Ten Hag putting a number of square pegs in a number of round holes. Mark, what did you make of Casemiro playing centre-back?
Look, I think that if he'd have performed well, then it would have been much of a standard to judge him against, because it's Coventry City and, you know, with all due respect, you know, a championship team. I thought that he was constantly put in situations that weren't particularly playing to his strengths, asking to defend one-on-one against players. Haji Wright, his pace, often exposed in that count. But look, I have a degree of sympathy with Ten Hag over the injury point, because he is having to put square pegs in round holes. It isn't totally within his control, the amount of problems that United have had with injuries this season, which isn't to absolve him either, I don't think. Because for everything that you've just said there, Carl, about the style, I agree. It perhaps doesn't fit the physical profiles, the athletic profiles of the players that he has at his disposal. Yes, some of them are quite suited to playing fast attacking football, but do they have the physicality to play that? We talk about that with the front players quite a lot. You just mentioned there, you know, Rashford, Garnacho, etc. I don't think it's a coincidence that we've seen a lot of injuries at the defensive end this season, because they're having to combine and play the style as well, and they aren't up to it. I think Casemiro's performance yesterday wasn't his greatest. It hasn't been his greatest season. And that signing now, I think in retrospect, if you think back 18 months, we were talking about United rebuilding their midfield. We were talking about this being a problem area. But they'd finally fixed it by signing Casemiro and Christian Eriksen, two players that are the wrong side of 30, that you wouldn't be surprised if they leave on a free this summer. And we're back in the same situation. So, you know, Casemiro just at centre-back, just like everything else, is a symptom of a much wider problem, which is something that we've discussed endlessly over many podcasts all season.
There's a design flaw to Ten Hag's plan in that you can see how he came to this formulation, but that formulation of playing transition-based football always leaves you prone to certain weaknesses. And one of the weaknesses last season was Man United, while they were good on attacking transition, they definitely had problems on defensive transition. And you could see that in United's record away from home last season. They weren't particularly good away from home against the top teams. But there was the idea that possibly with Andre Onana, Lisandro Martinez coming back to full fitness at the start of the season, that things could improve on that regard. And Ten Hag, with a proper preseason, could properly coach proper retreating systems, because one of the big problems for United this season is there's just far too much space in between your defence and your midfield. What's happened is the opposite, where due to further muscle injuries and Casemiro not being in the team for so long and Martinez also being injured, the gaps that were being covered by these two very good defensive individuals last season have become much, much, much bigger. So a design flaw that was always going to be covered up to a degree by some two or three individuals has been made way worse by the injuries to these individuals. And then further injuries have just created a huge balance flaw as well. So, and I agree with Mark there about, while certain players are well suited to this transition-based style of football, a number of them aren't. We're talking about, if you're playing up and down and up and down and up and down football, a player like Christian Eriksen, who is a precise passer and wants to put his foot on the ball and is Ajax educated, perhaps is not the best central midfielder to have there. And this is why we've not seen Eriksen play too much in the latter half of this season. And when he did come on Sunday against Wembley, he looks rather anonymous. He was overwhelmed by the physicality of Coventry's players. You've got players like Ahmad, who, you know, gets the winning goal against Liverpool in the quarterfinal, but hasn't played too much this season because he looks like someone who wants to play a little bit more in the half spaces. He wants to play in close combination with a number of players and can be good in counter-attacking football, but he wants to play more settled possession. So he doesn't quite fit. And Mr. Mainoo looks like he might one day have the physical profile to play this counter-attacking, high transition style of play. But at the moment, he probably benefits most from being a player who puts his foot on the ball. Harry Maguire, good centre-back when everything's in front of him. The moment he has to turn around and retreat to his own goal, things get difficult. So this is the gap in that if you want to be very, very cruel about it, you've got a school teacher who is trying to teach advanced calculus to a class that perhaps...
Be kind.
To a class that perhaps hasn't been doing this for so long. Thank you. That's me being kind.
That's very good. Critch, I'm just thinking about all this stuff and, you know, we're talking about the personnel, we're talking about the players. And I don't know if this is in defense of Ten Hag necessarily, but you've also got players who are all, from the outside at least, look like they're going through certain internal battles. I mean, we can talk about Marcus Rashford. You can talk about Onana when he came to Manchester United. You mentioned Harry Maguire as well. Anthony out there doing whatever he needs to do to play a football match. I mean, there's a lot there to inherit, and there's a lot there. Could you say that perhaps the manager might have created himself? Jadon Sancho?
Look, I wouldn't put all that squarely on Ten Hag. I know you're not. That's not the question.
I'm not.
No. But look, I think there was a lot of discussion yesterday about the celebrations, right, after the penalty shootout. And I thought that was really interesting because it seemed to really touch a nerve with a lot of people. And look, my reaction to that was I can understand Rasmus Højlund celebrating, stepping up to take that decisive penalty. Huge pressure, fifth penalty taker, going and celebrating the fact that he scored it and that United are through to the final. I can understand Andre Onana celebrating the save from Callum O'Hare, right? And how important that was. The Anthony thing, cup in the year, a little less, to be honest. And I don't think that was a great look. But I think rather than, you know, reading too much into that about this is the state of Manchester United, you know, it sums up the lack of class or whatever, I think that spoke to individual personalities, but also just the immense pressure that comes with playing for this club. The disallowed goal, when that went in, I was watching Ten Hag and like he was absolutely motionless, and I wrote about it in the match piece this morning, his reaction to that. But also you had the players, basically all 11 United players were inside the penalty box. Not one of them was on the feet. They were all totally knocked out by the fact that this, you know, they've thrown the game away in the circumstances and the way that they had. Look, the responsibility lies with them, absolutely. But you're not telling me that they have that reprieve and then they all line up in the penalty shootout, they must be all sat there thinking, what if we still mess this up? What if we still don't? You know, the shame, the ignominy, the pressure, the social media, whatever it is, they are under the scrutiny that players at most of the clubs in the country, let's be frank, aren't. And people react in different ways to that. And I'm not trying to excuse the way that some of them reacted, although I do think that spoke to, yeah, the pressure that comes with playing for United. And look, at the same time, I think it was telling the number of players who didn't celebrate. You had Harry Maguire immediately go over to the Coventry players and almost offer his apologies and commiserations with them. And there was an interest that he did an interview with MUTV after the game that I watched this morning. One of the questions was, you know, a very kind of, what about the fans and them really spurring you on? And his response to that, his first words were, well, if we'd lost, I don't think I would have been able to get back on the coach. You know, I don't think we'd have been able to leave the ground because the fans would have been so furious with them. You know, that is constantly at the forefront of their minds, these players. And I think that explained, you know, at least some of the reactions yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things that Mark Carey has written about in a new piece is, you know, he's looked at data and looked at perspective. If Manchester United were thinking of going that way, perspective managers, Carl, Amorim's name was thrown into the mix based on the data. You know, Michael Carrick's name was thrown into the ring based on the data, which I found really interesting. Now, here's my question, right? If they do move away from Erik ten Hag, what do United need? Do they need like a Champions League winning pro who's out there? Because they're not that many out there at this moment in time. Or do they go down the Arteta route, get someone who this is a brand new kind of step up for them? It's a big step up, but giving something new, something fresh. I mean, what is the perfect solution if there was one?
There is no perfect solution. I think this is interesting because this is the first one we're seeing on the Ineos. Saying if, as if it's already happened. It's not been confirmed yet. Let me rewind a little bit. Historically speaking, when Manchester United look to replace their manager, they tend to get a manager whose strength solves the weaknesses of the previous man. So David Moyes' weakness was he didn't have the history of winning to be a Manchester United manager. So Manchester United go through the Rolodex. They look at who Spurs are trying to hire. They go, oh, Louis van Gaal, we'll nick him. Hooray. And then Louis van Gaal's criticism was the fact that the football wasn't particularly entertaining and he felt a little bit like yesterday's man. So Manchester United go through the Rolodex and go, oh, who's a good modern day who's a good winner in the modern era? And it was, oh, Mr. Mourinho, let's go get him. He will also be a really interesting way to battle Pep Guardiola. And then when towards the end of Mourinho's tenure, it was Mourinho is abrasive, shall we say, and a lot of players are feeling really downbeat. Let's get in someone who can restore the morale of Manchester United and really reconnect players with what Manchester United was. And then it went through the Rolodex and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer came through. And then again, when it came to the end, Solskjaer's tenure, it was one of the criticisms of Solskjaer's reign was he didn't seem to have the tactical acumen of other top managers in the league. So Erik ten Hag came in because ten Hag had that great Champions League record with Ajax. He also rebuilt Ajax to an extent and got them to some success in the latter stage of Champions League competition once again. So ten Hag was seen as a antidote to some of the failures of Solskjaer. So if you want to continue that logic, one of Ten Hag's critiques right now is the football is confusing and morale appears to be low. That's what Mark says. So the solution to that might be someone who can play a simpler form of football and reconnect Manchester United back to its fan base, which sounds like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer again.
there's a tumbleweed moment here. I don't know if anyone's noticed.
You said it, Carl.
Historically speaking, Solskjaer's name probably comes up again in discussion. And I'm sure there's quite a few Manchester United fans listening, watching this, that were saying, I wouldn't mind Ole Gunnar Solskjaer coming back again for a little bit. I think when we talk about the perfect Manchester United manager, that's also linked to this, what is the Manchester United way? What is a Manchester United manager? Really, right? This is a football club that has 1.1 billion followers around the world. That's what the club likes to use the word followers rather than fans now in true modern football media speak. And you are, I know Erik ten Hag said sometimes you're like a minister and you're trying to talk to a lot of people across the world. And this job right now, you have players who have been signed under managers going as far back as Louis van Gaal. They've all been signed to play slightly different styles of football. So the squad is a mishmash, a patchwork quilt, a Frankenstein's monster of players all signed to do different footballing needs. And whoever comes in will, one, have to simplify what that squad will look like and properly define what that team is supposed to play like for the next 3 to 4 years. And then possibly there'll be a question as to whether or not that manager is doing the correct job and then possibly if that manager needs a successor. This is the complication of Manchester United. If Erik ten Hag doesn't stay this summer, I don't think they're looking for one manager, but they should probably start planning for two. One to get Manchester United to be a constant top four, top five presence. And then eventually, when possibly, I know Sir Jim Ratcliffe has mentioned 2028 as a possible year where we can start measuring Ineos's development of the club, and 2028 might possibly be a year where we have further details on what's going to go on with Old Trafford and the redevelopment or refurbishment of the stadium. But there's going to be a point in a future Manchester United manager's tenure where that person will face questions as to, okay, you've closed the gap to Manchester City, Arsenal and the rest, but are you going to be the person to take Manchester United to the next level? Because eventually, every United manager who comes in and begins some form of revival eventually gets the question of, okay, you've done good. When do you win the title again?
This is the Athletic FC podcast with Ayo Akinwalera.
Manager aside, there's still a lot of restructuring happening at Manchester United. You know, Omar Berrara's due to start this summer. We talked about Jason Wilcox as well, coming in as technical director as well. From an Ineos perspective, Mark, how is it important to get these key decision makers into play before we even start talking about what comes next in terms of who might lead this team forward?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely imperative to do that. And look, it was something that Ratcliffe mentioned in his interview with the BBC after his marathon yesterday.
One of the biggest problems we've got in football is you get these new guys to come into the team, really capable people, but they're all on gardening leave. And so it takes you 6 months or a year or 18 months before they can It's a real issue in football, you know.
I think in that interview you could sense his frustration, you know, when they basically asked him, trying to compare it to the marathon and how the pain and the strain of running that distance, he immediately likened it to essentially the negotiations with Newcastle for Dan Ashworth. I mean, if you read it between the lines there. So look, I think it's a point of frustration. I don't think Ineos have been naive enough to come in and think that it would be easy, you know, that they would be able to just cherry pick people from different clubs and build this team, you know, before the summer, essentially. And it does look like, particularly with Ashworth, that those negotiations are going to take a little while longer, and he probably isn't going to be in place for the summer, or at least the start of the summer. So there is difficulty there. I think it speaks to the urgency that there was, really, if you remember that little period between back in the autumn when Sheikh Jassim dropped out the race, and it basically became, you know, unofficial that Ineos were going to win that takeover race. We were expecting things to move quickly, weren't we? And then they didn't. And then there was a bit of frustration, a bit of impatience. And I think it speaks to the fact that, you know, they wanted to announce a deal on Christmas Eve, when I'm sure many Ineos employees, United employees, and a lot of sports journalists as well, I can speak from experience, would rather have spent a bit of time with their family and friends rather than writing up about the Manchester United takeover. But there was an urgency to get things done, because as people will know, there's really only a finite 3 months of each year where the full business and is executed in what makes a huge difference on the pitch. I'm talking about the transfer window, right? You need to have everything in place for that summer in order to make material differences on the pitch. And I think there's been a sense within Ineos at all times that throughout this process that they've wanted to do that and get that in as quickly as possible, but it's not quite happened yet. So yeah, I feel like that process still has some way to go. And there are theories that gives Ten Hag a stay of execution. Although, you know, we are at the same time starting to see things take shape. I mean, Omar Berard is still on gardening leave, but Jason Wilcox is in the building now. Things are starting to fall into place.
A quick one on, you know, technical director Jason Wilcox, who's been appointed. Manchester United said, you know, he will work with all technical areas of footballing departments to achieve the highest standards of performance. Carl, from what we know of him, how good is he? Is he the one to take it to that next level? Because I know of a reputation at Manchester City and also at Southampton as well.
Yes, so former academy role at Manchester City, goes over to Southampton, becomes their director of football. From what I know, talking to people, I covered Southampton for a season that year. Like, from what I know, talking to people about Southampton, very, very good in terms of youth development, very, very good in terms of youth talent ID. In terms of other aspects of the club, perhaps not so much. You know, you've got everyone's got their specialities. That doesn't mean the things that aren't your speciality you're not necessarily good at. It just means they're not your speciality. Now, if you're a Manchester United fan, going, okay, well, this person's really good at youth development, and that can be their bread and butter in the technical director role. And then, of course, when you're reporting to a director of football, who might be Ashworth, who might be someone else, that director of football can take care of other things that aren't necessarily Wilcox's specialty there as well. So a measured yes, I think, is the one when people were being excited about it. The academy right now at Manchester United is better than it has been for quite some time. As you've seen with, you know, the FA Youth Cup triumph not too long ago with Garnacho and Mainoo in the team. The under-18 team has won their league, and they'll be playing in the cup this week. You know, they're talking, they're going to be playing at Lee Sports Village on Tuesday evening. So the academy's in a good place. There's been more investment in the academy, and they've come a long way in the last 10 years. And I think now you're seeing this in a really basic way. You're seeing former United pros no longer send their children to the City Academy, but bring their children back to the United Academy. So if you're Jason Wilcox, that is a nice boon, and possibly you can, you know, time to cook, as the Gen Z teens like to tell me.
Super quick, Critch, before we go. Look, you know, this is Ten Hag's second FA Cup in the last 2 years, which is phenomenal. FA Cup final, I should say, in the last 2 years. They're playing Manchester City once again in the final. You know where I'm going with this. Is there enough guts, grit in this team to pull something out of the hat in this FA Cup final? Because it's still a cup competition. Anything can happen.
It's one game, you're right. You wouldn't rule them out of it. I think we'd be unwise to do so. But look, I think Ten Hag beat City at Old Trafford last season, if you remember. I think the team at that time was in a very different place. There was a lot more positivity around Ten Hag's first 6 months in charge. Even in that game, it required a fairly controversial decision for Marcus Rashford not being flagged offside so Bruno Fernandes could score. And the games since then have been pretty one-sided, you would say. So, look, I don't think there's a reason for optimism, but I think, or confidence, I think those would be the wrong words, to be honest. But I think there is hope. That is what United have, not just for that game, but the wider structure as well, right? The wider structure as well. Like the fact that the fundamental structural problems that we're talking about that we always seem to relate back to, no matter what aspect of whatever's gone wrong at Manchester United we're discussing on any weekly basis, that is being addressed by Ineos. That's not going to help them for one game, though. That's in about a month's time. So look, I don't think I'm certainly not going in with high expectations. I'd advise anyone else against doing so as well. But it's one game, and one game can change the whole picture quite considerably.
Yeah, I mean, this is something to finish the season on a high, Carl. Hope, is that a wonderful word to leave in Manchester United fans?
Hope is a discipline. It has to be practiced every single day.
That's all you'll say. I respect that. Thank you very much. All right, let's end it there. Carl, Mark, thanks so much for your time. And don't forget to rate and review the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We're back tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Athletic FC podcast. The producers were Guy Clark, Mike Stavrou and Jay Beale. The executive producer was Amy Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. The Athletic FC podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.